Indigenous Health Med Talks with Dr. Danielle Arabina, yarning with innovators, trailblazers and community leaders in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander health and medicine. Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander listeners are advised that this podcast may contain the voices of persons now deceased. We would like to acknowledge the traditional custodians, Yuggera and Turrbal people, from where Dr. Danielle is broadcasting, and extend our acknowledgement to the elders past and present of all our listeners.
So today on the podcast, we're going to be talking to Dr. Carly Haywood, and she's a descendant from the Wanman people from Western Australia. So welcome to the show, Carly.
Thank you.
Thank you. So Carly, you've done everything. You're the current president of the Australian Indigenous Doctors Association. You're a GP supervisor, and you are a cultural and medical educator for GPEX, which is the GP training provider in South Australia.
Yes, that's correct.
So can you tell us a bit about where you're working right now?
So currently I'm working at Ngakamaran Yunti, which is the largest Aboriginal community-controlled health organisation in South Australia. I've been working at Ngakamaran Yunti since I was a registrar, actually, and so part of my role with GPEX is encouraging registrars to complete an Aboriginal health training post. And having done one myself and continuing on, I know the training, what type of training you get as a registrar, what type of supervision you get as a registrar, and then staying on as a fellow as well and continuing that work. I love the work that I do in Aboriginal health. I think the medicine that you see is complex, but the people that you work with are just amazing.
Yeah, and I think that that's something, you know, maybe we could talk to our Reggies about today who will be listening to the program. So that's one of my joys as well as working in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander health is the complexity of the patients. And I think that's something that we don't see a lot in mainstream. I often say to Reggies, when we're treating one patient, we're actually treating their whole family. Is that what you find in South Australia?
Absolutely. I think you've got to be very mindful of who's sitting in front of you. They've travelled a journey, and that journey includes their family, includes their community, and so we need to be mindful of that when we're talking through management and we're expecting our patients to do things. It's a two-way street. They have their agenda and we have ours, but we really need to be listening to that story to see how we can meet the needs of our patients appropriately.
Mm. And so where do you have your patients coming from? Because you're quite next to the sort of desert area in South Australia, aren't you? So do you get any desert mob coming in?
We service a wide range of people at Ngakamaran Yunti. Absolutely those that are visiting from APY land that coming to Adelaide, perhaps their family members are in hospital or they themselves need to come to the city for treatment. We see a lot of homeless people at Ngakamaran Yunti. We see families, we see elders. We run a lot of different programs, and that's another big difference of working in community-controlled health services, because we have such a big team. We have visiting specialists, we have visiting allied health staff, we've got LinkUp, which is a program that reunites those that were forcibly removed as children with their families. We've got social workers, psychologists, psychiatrists. So we try and make it a really culturally safe place for people to get their health needs met.
And I think that's one of the benefits of working in an Aboriginal medical service is that the programs that they run actually responds to the needs of the community. So over at Stradbroke, the Yulibulurba, this AMS over there, they actually have like surf school. So they'll have their kids coming in and doing a 715 check, so an Indigenous health check, and then allowed to go to learn how to surf, which I think is pretty cool. Do you have any programs like that?
Yeah, we've got a lot of different programs, not necessarily learning how to surf.
That would it's amazing. too many sharks
but we
down
have
there.
A lot of different. Yes, particularly around Port Lincoln.
Yeah.
But we run programs for mothers and babies. We had a pampering workshop. So we got a masseuse to come in. We've got a nail clinician to come in, and they had a manicure, and that we had makeup artists come in and do their hair and face, and so do different little programs for mums. And then we also have a program program around healthy eating and looking at food on a budget. We also have a gym at Ngarrawarra Nyuntee. They can do some boxing. We also have programs run by Tackling Tobacco. So they take them to it and do some programs. So lots of different things that you can link your clients into, which was really helpful as a doctor.
Yeah, and so with in Aboriginal medical services, quite often you'll have sort of Indigenous staff. So you'll have your might be an Aboriginal nurse, but have you got health workers there?
Absolutely. We've got Aboriginal health workers and Aboriginal health practitioners, and they are fundamental to the work that we do. Again, it is team environment. So our clients will be screened by an Aboriginal health worker practitioner first. And that's invaluable because you can get a lot of information from your health worker. They sit down, they spend half an hour with each client, and they then come and speak to us about why that person presented and some of the issues that are happening in the community that may be impacting clients' life.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, that's a really important thing, I think, for our registrars to understand, you know, the things that can impact on a client's life or a patient's life. So things like sorry business that's happening in the community. Do you find that things like that impact, you know, on attendance numbers?
Yes. We unfortunately do have a lot of deaths within the Aboriginal community within South Australia, and my husband is a minister, an Aboriginal minister, and he did about 36 funerals in 1 year, and it's just a heavy burden that our community has to live with, and that ongoing grief and loss impacts on people's health. We know that body and mind are so connected, and so really being cognizant of what's happening in the community, what sorry business is happening and how that can impact on their presentation.
Okay. Yeah, I know. It's that sort of community grief fatigue, I think, that happens as well. It's, you know, I see that a lot in the communities I visit and work in. It's just like, oh, another person's passed. And it's almost like they're reeling from one grief story to another.
That's exactly what it is. And you know, speaking to one of our Aboriginal psychiatrists, and she was saying that it takes about 5 years for someone to really go through that grieving process, but our community just doesn't get a chance to have 5 years without, you know, experiencing another loss in the community. So that burden of grief and loss is huge and significant, and it does impact on our health in terms of chronic disease and mental health.
Yeah, absolutely. The effects, that's what a lot of work that I do is around the effects of chronic stress and how it can actually, you know, change our epigenetics and change our microbiome. And we know that all of those things are becoming quite important when we're understanding the health of our patients. So, you know, I think that that's a really important factor. And also loss around not just someone passing, but, you know, maybe someone being incarcerated or, you know, even being lost from the community. So they might have to travel to a different community or go to live in a city. So there's all these different losses, I think, that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander patients will experience.
I agree.
Yeah. So speaking of incarceration, I understand, Carly, that you're doing some locum work in a prison. That sounds like that would be really interesting, but also probably heartbreaking to run that sort of clinic. Can you share a bit about that with us?
Well, yeah, I just had done a few sort of locum jobs within the local youth detention centre, and unfortunately, I've been seeing a lot of young Aboriginal boys in the detention centre who are just so sweet. And you sit there and you think what life has done to them at such a young age for them to be in a position where they're finding themselves in youth detention. And so this is a huge problem, incarceration amongst Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, particularly amongst our women, actually. So I've found it rewarding but sad at the same time. And these young kids, I've got children of my own. So, yeah, it's been really interesting work.
So are you working, sorry, more with females or males or both?
Males, young boys.
Yeah, and you know, that's a lot of important work I think we need to do in the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander community is around young men, because the loss for them, I think, is quite big, the things that they've experienced in their lives, and maybe the loss of positive role models as well.
Yeah, I think there's this identity crisis almost of where they fit in within community. What is their role now? And I think that there needs to be some really strong work around men's groups and support for men and where they fit in with family, where they fit in with community, and yeah, their role.
Yeah, and I've actually seen that starting a lot in the Aboriginal medical services we work in now. They're starting, like, you know, strong fathers groups or strong men's group. And, you know, it's sort of like the men's shed. Mm. So they'll come together and pull apart a lawnmower and talk about how we fix it up. So yeah. I love that there's actually a beautiful groundswell around supporting our men in communities starting to happen, which is great.
Absolutely. And talking about being a parent, talking about being a dad and what that means and the role modelling that needs to happen within the community around.
Mm. And so, Carly, I also would love to touch on your work as the president of the Australian Indigenous Doctors Association. First of all, can you tell us about the organisation and how people can join up if they're interested? And why would they want to?
So AIDA or the Australian... Oh, why would you not? AIDA is a not-for-profit member-based organisation that really formed out of growing need for support for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander doctors and medical students. So in 1997, a group of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander doctors and medical students got together to form AIDA, and it was around collegiate support. It was around this increasing number of us going to medical school and what sort of support the universities and colleges were offering our doctors and students, which was very minimal. So from that sort of brainchild of the group, this organisation formed, and we've grown in number. We now currently have 600 members. You don't have to be an Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander person, doctor, medical student to join. You can become an associate member. It's really about supporting Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander doctors in their role, because our numbers are still so small. We've only got 427 doctors at the moment, and to reach population parity, which is about 3% of the population, we need another 2,600 right now, and we're not there yet. We've got a similar numbers amongst our medical students. And this is so that we can build our Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander medical workforce, so that we can then go back into community, we can then stay in the hospitals where Aboriginal people go, and provide culturally safe, culturally appropriate support for our community members. When in times of distress, you know, we're going into a hospital, you're usually quite unwell, and so seeing an Aboriginal person there who's treating you, you feel that someone is there to advocate on your behalf, and that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to improve the health of Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander community in general. So, yeah, AIDA is a fantastic organisation. We have our conference coming up in a couple of weeks in September in Perth, and it's a bit of a different conference because we have some cultural context to this as well. So it's a bit of a different medical conference, and I encourage people to think about attending AIDA conference, connecting with our students and our doctors, and talking about Aboriginal health from Aboriginal people.
Absolutely. And the exciting thing is that you and I will both be there. So why wouldn't you want to attend a conference like
why
that?
Why wouldn't you want to come?
Signatures given. And the other good thing is that it's you get 40 CPT points through RACGP, is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah. And so you can join up and become an associate member if you're interested in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander health, and you don't have to be an Indigenous doctor. Is that correct?
And that is correct. You can become an associate member, and organisations can join as well. So GPEX is an organisation that's joined AIDA, and just it's about offering support and tracking that journey together.
Yeah, and there's actually specific education sessions for associate members as well. So
yeah, we start the conference with yarning circles, so sitting down, really deep briefing about know, medicine and the journey that we travel in medicine. And as doctors, I don't think we spend enough time debriefing. And so we start our conference with a yarning circle and talking about our experience throughout the year and what it's been like for us, not only in medical school, but, you know, in our training programs as well. And the associate members have their own yarning circle. And sometimes we get people in to do some cultural awareness training through their yarning circle.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So, listeners, if you're keen, join AIDA, become an associate member and come along and see us at one of the conferences. So we have them once a year, and this year is in Perth. So, Carly, I just want to ask you a couple of other questions as we're sort of rounding out this interview. So how can we as doctors do Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander health better?
I think it's Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander health is about learning. It's about learning and listening to Aboriginal people and what they want in terms of their health care. Because I think as doctors, we're taught in medical school that, you know, we've got to treat the disease and we need to be very methodical and we need to, you know, get from A to B to C in a particular order. But working in Aboriginal health, it's much more about listening to your patient and travelling that journey together. I think it's an amazing part of medicine. It's something that I've enjoyed doing for many, many years. The people that you work with are experienced and they want to be there. And if you like working in a team, then, you know, Aboriginal health is for you. Aboriginal people are just an amazing group of people that have a burden of disease that is quite shocking in a country like Australia. And so if you really do want to make a difference in medicine, then working in Aboriginal health is the place to be. If you can do Aboriginal health well, you can do medicine well, full stop, because it translates into every other area of medicine.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that, Carly. So, you know, and it is, it's something that's very passionate to me. When I talk to my registrars, we talk a bit around understanding that there's more to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander health than just looking at the sore knee or treating the diabetes. It's a whole person, whole community approach. And for us, you know, also things like spirituality, you know, using the Nunkari. So you touched on with the AIDA conference that there's a bit of a cultural space that's provided. And do you want to just have a quick yarn about the Nunkari and the work that they do with AIDA and also maybe in your work?
Well, yeah. So the Nunkaris are our traditional healers, and they really were the first doctors in Australia, long before the first medical doctor came over on the boat with Captain Cook. We've had doctors here for thousands of years, and a lot of our patients want to continue to see a Nunkari. And Nunkaris are not exclusive. They do not say, well, you either do my way or their way, you can't do both. They really want to work with doctors, and if they feel that someone needs antibiotics or needs to be on antipsychotic medication, they'll say, go and see the doctor, you need to get that treated. So we work hand in hand. They do a lot of spiritual healing as well, which I think is really important within our community. And so we as doctors shouldn't be afraid of things that are other or traditional. I think we need to be open and mindful that there have been other practices going on for many, many years that have shown to have worked. And so, again, we need to be listening to our patient about what they want in terms of their care for their health. And if that's seeing a Nunkari, then let's access that for them. So in South Australia, we do have Nunkari clinics that we can access and refer our patients to, and they are entering into the hospital as well and treating patients in the hospital system. So we've had a special relationship at AIDA with Nunkari for many, many years. They come to our conference every year and they sit and they talk to the medical students and they talk to the doctors, and we do some dancing and dance workshops and those sorts of things and singing. It's all about healing in many forms. So I think we need to be open to other forms of medicine.
Yeah, beautiful. You know, and the Nunkari have got a very special place in my heart as well. So in our podcast notes, I'll actually put some links to some videos that we made. We've had we did an interview with some Nunkari, and we've also got a video around where traditional and modern medicine meet. So I'll put those into the show notes so people can have a little look at that. So, Carly, just using your expertise as a medical educator and a cultural educator, what are some tips for GP registrars around doing Indigenous health well?
Some simple things that they can do: always bulk bill your Aboriginal patients. Make sure you're signed up to close the gaps initiative, which is the CTG on a script. So this program, when the government started this, really I saw a huge change in the health of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. So if you don't know about it, do the research on the CTG program. Always have a double appointment when you're seeing Aboriginal people, because you need to start your consultation with a yarn, just finding out how they're going, you know, how's family, you know, did you go to the footy, all that sort of stuff. That really helps in your consult with your Aboriginal patient. And look at the environment that your patients are coming into. Is there anything in the waiting room that suggests that, you know, it's a welcoming place for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander patients? With the Close the Gap initiative, two staff members have to do cultural awareness training. So I always recommend that one has to be a doctor, but the second person is that person should be the receptionist doing cultural awareness training, because that is that front line for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. So if we can have a friendly face in reception, it's so important. So, yeah, there's some simple tips that you can do. If you're attending one of Danielle's immersion workshops, I recommend that you do. But if you're doing some artwork or painting, bring that back into your consulting room. Make that be a talking point when you see your Aboriginal clients. Get to know who their mob is. Ask the question. And having said ask the question about whether they're Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander as well, because that sometimes is not done.
Yeah, and that's right. And it's interesting, because I'm a fair-skinned Torres Strait Islander person. So, you know, you can't tell just by looking at somebody if they identify as being Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander. So I totally agree to ask the question. So there's some great tips there, Carly, particularly around the gap.
Can I say one more?
Yeah, sure. Of course you can.
I always tell my registrars to do the Aboriginal adult health check or child health check. Don't get your practice nurse to do it. You need to do it from beginning to end. It's a fantastic opportunity to ask some really sensitive questions that you may not ask necessarily. So things about their sexual health, mental health, social history. Do a 715. Just a great initiative. Plus, there has been in the past some exams around that, so a VIVA on a 715. So if a registrar hasn't done it, then they won't pass that question very well.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing you said that was really important is to have a yarn with the patient before you sort of start the consult. And I totally agree. I do. I'll always see an Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander patient as a double appointment, and I'll bulk bill. But what I do at the end of the consult is I'll actually write notes around, you know, worried about Auntie Bessie, you know, being unwell. So when they come back in the next time, I say, oh, hey, how's Auntie Bessie going? So I think that that's a really good little tip to help build rapport. The other thing I just wanted to ask you really quickly, Carly, and I know that you do some great work in engaging with the elders. So do you have any tips for any of the doctors who'd be listening about how we can engage with our local elders?
There are a lot of community programs out there, and having a look and doing some research about what programs are available in your community. I would really talk to GPTQ about potentially cultural mentors and as a way of linking in with elders. But it is about putting yourself out there. It's about not being afraid to ask questions and not being afraid to have a learning experience. And my number one tip for connecting with elders is do an Aboriginal health training post. That way you're immersed in it.
And absolutely. And I think also doing things like going to the NAIDOC Day celebration or going to community events, going to the National Apology Day is really important as well. So just getting your face seen in the community, I think, is another good place to start. Excellent. Well,
absolutely.
Now, Carly, what's in the future for Carly Haywood?
Me, what's in the future for me?
Yeah.
I will be stepping down from the AIDA presidency in about 3 weeks' time. I've been on the AIDA board for nearly 10 years, so it's time to do some other things. I will always be remain connected with AIDA, but I have been successful in another job prospect. So I'll be the medical consultant for an Aboriginal family clinic in the south of Adelaide. So I'm really looking forward to that and spending time with my children, because when I first started AIDA, my daughter was 4 and she's now 14. So yeah.
Big work, and thank you so much for your work. And I understand you've got a new family member.
I do. I've got a new cat.
A little rescue cat.
Phoenix is her name. She's a shelter cat. A shelter cat, yes. Oh, so getting to know her.
That's beautiful. So there, that's what's on the cards for Dr. Carly. And still, you know, it's all the important work.
I'm going to become the cat woman.
Yeah, crazy cat lady with your trolley with about 10 cats yeah. hanging around you. Yeah. Beautiful. I look forward to seeing that. I think that would be a lovely profile pic for you. So, Carly, I'd like to thank you so much for your sharing your knowledge and your wisdom with us today. And I wish you all the very best in your future. And as a Torres Strait Islander doctor, I'd like to thank you for all the work you've done and, you know, for bettering our people. As the president of AIDA, I've watched you take that organisation from strength to strength. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been a long journey but interesting.
Thank you. Take care. Bye.
Thanks for listening. Please subscribe and check out our YouTube channel, Indigenous Health Med Talk. This podcast is a General Practice Training Queensland initiative, supported by Australian General Practice Training and the Australian Government.